Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. Really excited because with us today, we have Tanis George. Tanis is the author of the Co-Founders Handbook, as well as the founder of the Co-Founders Hub. Tanis, welcome to the podcast.
Hi there. Good to be here.
So, lots to talk about as it relates to your experience in the early stage ecosystem. If we can start, would love to know what's the focus of the book. And from there, if we can pivot over to the hub, that'd be great.
Yeah, perfect. You know, it's actually, so the book is actually quite a bit tied to my journey as an entrepreneur. The Co-Founders Handbook is designed to assist co-founders all throughout the stages of their partnership. So from the first question you ask yourself of, you know, should I have a co-founder, all the way to how do I get the heck out of this partnership? You know, all the things that happen in between and from, you know, start to finish. And so the handbook was designed that way because I built multiple companies with the same co-founder. And so I felt I really had that expertise from the actual in the trenches vibe and the expertise that I can come from having actually lived the experience. And then, of course, after interviewing tons of other co-founders for the book, be able to grasp their expertise and then put that into the handbook to really be able to guide co-founders as they walk through this really pivotal factor in the success of their business.
And so is there a general consensus that two heads are better than one, or do we see historically more success with solo founders?
Yeah, you know, the jury is still out because people have different ideologies about how this works. From my perspective, I'm always pro co-founder. I'm a big believer in, you know, when people can work together, of course, two heads are better than one. And but that is that if they can work together is the key point. And there are so many elements that make success as partners possible. And if you don't know these factors and you don't work them into your working relationship on literally a daily basis, then you can actually have what I call is the Trojan horse that comes into your business. You're not even thinking about it. And it actually ends up being the demise of your company. So definitely I'm always 100% pro co-founder partnerships, but there are times when maybe the person isn't right to have a co-founder or just the players that would make up the partnership are not the right group.
So I'm sure you go into this in detail in the book, but I'll be happy to answer. I'm going to ask, you know, on the one hand, I think about dilution, right? Mm-hmm. Let's just say you go 50-50 out of the gates. So I'm sure there could be a conversation to have that it was a different split depending on who the co-founders are.
Yeah.
One of the criticisms I've heard about having a co-founder though, is this idea that no one's going to work harder than you. Obviously, that's a bit subjective. There are plenty of people who work even harder. But what's your experience and research tell you is a really good way to get to brass tacks of whether the person you're considering going into business with really is aligned with you philosophically on effort, strategy, direction? Love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I found, so as I interviewed co-founders who both succeeded and failed, what I really learned was that expectations not communicated end up creating resentment, mistrust, all the things that lead to a failed partnership. And so this idea of jumping into a partnership with the rose-colored glasses that, hey, you know, we're both excited about this business. We both think we're building the next Facebook. You know, we're really optimistic. And there might be a couple of things that we see coming down the road, but we can work that out. You know, that's the biggest mistake that people make is they actually don't address any sort of red flags that they might feel early on. Because of course, who wants to start off a relationship and a partnership already thinking about the bad things that are going to happen. And people don't always do well in having those tough conversations. So I think one of the main key pieces of a successful partnership is really laying out what are the expectations that I have of you as my partner, and then what you have of me. Because in that conversation, you end up finding out really where people are at. And that includes not just, you know, what roles are we going to take, but what titles are we going to take, or how much salary are we going to pull? The money conversations, or how much money are we both going to invest and when? You know, those conversations get really interesting if you haven't had them. And you'd be shocked to hear how many people don't actually have those conversations until long after they've signed the partnership. So really, you know, sitting down and asking the tangible, practical questions about how you will run the business now and your vision for it over the next 2, 3, 4 years is a really, really telling exercise that I highly recommend co-founders go through.
Yeah, you remind me of this idea of expect the best, prepare for the worst.
100%.
One of the ways, and there's a parallel to marriage. Uh-huh. I probably a conversation for another day, but I mean, you know, I don't know how I feel about prenups, but let me ask, is there a similar concept that you found, like an insurance so much that founders can take, whether it's terms in the founder shares or other?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So the first thing that I always recommend that founders do is they have a vesting period for the shares when they write start. So a vesting period with a cliff. So what that means is that I usually recommend that your shares within, let's say we have two partners doing 50-50, those shares fully vest over the first 4 years. And the reason for that is, of course, there's all the unknowns. You know, a lot of times people think they want to be an entrepreneur. And then once they start that journey, they go, oh my gosh, this is a lot more difficult, or whatever the case may be. Or I really thought that I could put the time and effort into this, and I realized that I can't, even innocently. You know, those kind of decisions can be made. So those 4 years really ensure that the people who stick with the business are getting the reward through equity in that case. The cliff means is that none of those shares vest until the first year has happened. So technically speaking, if a founder joins or the two co-founders get up and go, and the first co-founder leaves within 6 months, well, they don't get any equity because they didn't stick around. So that is a really safe way. It's kind of like a prenup. It's just like, let's make sure that we're going to be in this together. And then, of course, your partnership agreement, which before that is that conversation starter that I told you about, where you really sit down and go through all the important elements that need to be discussed. And then once they're agreed upon, you sign that and you say, this is what we've agreed going forward, how the milestones will be met, how our factors of our partnership will be determined. And then you can go forward and create a really strong legal document, which becomes your partnership agreement.
I mean, it probably makes a really good sense. You know, I'm not a big fan of spending a lot of money on lawyers in the very beginning, but it sounds like it's a tiny good investment. Before we talk about the hub, where can people find the book?
Yeah, the book is available basically every bookstore out there in almost every format. So you can get it in paperback, hardcover, Audible, you can put it in audio, ebook, all the options are available there for you. So Amazon, Apple, all of them.
Perfect. Okay. So I think I recall you mentioning that the book was signed to the hub. We'll love to know how that's the case.
Yeah, exactly. So once I wrote the book, I realized that there really were a lack of deep exercises and courses that people could take to really deepen that partnership and its strength. And so the Co-Founders Hub is getting beta right now. It hasn't quite launched yet. And through that, we are providing what we call our Entrepreneur and Co-Founder Mastery Series. And what this is going to allow co-founders to do is really work alongside a consultant to work within their partnership all throughout. So we would walk them through that early stage of helping them determine who they are as an entrepreneur so they can best together fill in each other's gaps, add where it needs to be added, and as well, really determine how do you communicate well. That's a big key is a piece of it as well. How do we as leaders of this company man the ship together and actually build it efficiently and effectively, and in a way that really provides the best of us as individuals, as leadership. So the Co-Founders Hub is going to be that place where co-founders can go to get access to those exercises in really strengthening their partnership. And then from there, we have another series, which is really those deep questions about how do you align your vision going forward as your company shifts and takes corners and pivots and does all these things. You as leaders need to be on the same page. Otherwise, I often equate it to two captains holding the wheel of a boat, you know, and if one is even slightly thinking they're going to go west of the island and the other one thinks I might go a bit east of the island, just that alone, they're just going to be struggling with each other. And so we really want to help these founders to come together, be looking in the exact same direction so that they're effectively leading their companies.
That's great. So I heard you say you're in beta. Is there an opportunity for anyone to participate in the beta platform right now?
Yeah, absolutely. If you go to the cofoundershub.com, we actually will be releasing it on a short for anybody who wants to run it through it early on and be part of our beta testers and such. So yeah, there's definitely a case. And maybe even by the time this comes out, it might already be available. So both could be a great option for folks.
Fantastic. And we'll make sure to include in the show notes URL to get there. So with that, you mentioned in the beginning that you've had your own co-founder for a number of businesses. Yeah. You and I had a brief opportunity to talk beforehand, and I know you've had material and enormous success with some of your past companies. So we're all ears. If you can set the stage of what was the inspiration for the Handbook and the Hub.
Yeah, for sure. So I started my first company right out of high school, and it was with my best friend in high school. And he and I started our first business, very green, no college or university degrees, just real learn as we go experience. And we started our first business, which was in the online credit reporting space. And, you know, for all intents and purposes, all of our businesses were in the identity space, in the data space. And we built all three companies over the course of 10 years. We were able to successfully exit each of those companies every 3 years. So that was exciting. We gave our 20s, we said we gave our 20s to not partying, but building businesses. And so we did that. And then when we completed that, we decided to take on an idea that we had. And actually go to Silicon Valley, raise funds, which we did in 2011 for a company called Truly You. And over the course of the 10 years, Truly You grew to be the world's largest identity verification platform in the world. And we were very fortunate and excited that in 21, we raised what for the very short period of time was Canada's largest Series D round, valuing Truly You just over 2 billion Canadian. And it was a really, really exciting ride. And that was, again, something myself and my co-founder were able to do together. So we had a lot of experiences in starting companies, scaling companies, exiting businesses together, and still being able to do it each time as friends and even coming out at the very end as friends. And so that's where I felt my experience was really unique, because few people actually successfully succeed in those partnerships, not so even so much the business, but being able to continuously work with somebody and learn how to adapt how you make decisions with another person in mind was what I think was really unique that the book brings to the table, is that experience from founders who've done that. So yeah, so that's what we were able to do as a team.
Brilliant. So if we can unpack Trulio, would love to know if you can give us maybe high level overview chapters of how the company got to a multi-billion dollar valuation. And if you can think of any stories where, you know, having a co-founder really made a difference on the growth trajectory, would love to hear.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. There's a few theories out there of whether or not investors will invest in a solopreneur, or do they only invest in co-founder partnerships? And again, this is one of those juries are out situations where I definitely know investors who say, I will never invest in a solo founder. I think the vast majority, obviously, would no investor that I know of says I don't invest in co-founder partnerships. So let's just put it that way. There's some that say they don't invest in solopreneurs, and then there's none that say they don't invest in co-founders. So there's definitely an advantage to that. But I think for us as entrepreneurs, as we went to raise money, you know, having a strong co-founder partnership and being able to demonstrate that to investors was, I think, a really key piece. Stephen and I had a track record of building companies and exiting together, and being able to really demonstrate that us together as leaders is a key value point to investors. And so that was, I think, something that was really an element in our early success, especially in raising money, is to be able to demonstrate that us as leaders were cohesive, that we were on vision together in the same way. And I think that was a really important piece. You know, and then of course, there's always that aspect of two different personalities as you walk into a create a culture in a company, being able to navigate, you know, your team, and being able to put, you know, a different founder with a different group of people because, you know, you relate better, or you can be that leader to other people in a way that the other one maybe can't. There's all those benefits to that. So I think those were some of the key pieces that we were able to use, is really find each other's strengths and without any ego say, hey, you do this because you're better at it, and I'll do this because I'm better at that. And I think that can be a hard thing for some co-founders to do. I think a lot of times founderships don't recognize how important it is to put the ego aside and to really recognize that together you're a team, and their success begets your success. And I often have to remind co-founders who are struggling or having challenges to say, listen, like, don't aim to just be a benefit to yourself. You have to both benefit in this. And when you do that, you succeed much better. And so that's what we were able to do with Trulio, definitely.
Fantastic. Well, I think you know what I'm going to ask next is, then can you share a moment when you guys were at Loggerheads?
Yeah.
And how did it play out?
Yeah. So, you know, it was interesting. So we built our first three companies together. And then our fourth company with Trulio, there were some hiccups, and we were having some struggles a little bit in how we were navigating our roles. And I remember for the longest time, I couldn't figure out what it is, like, why is it different this time around? And then I realized that I had two kids now, and that life stage became a really, was a different experience. I wanted to be able to, well, have my cake and eat it too. I wanted to be able to be around to raise my two young kids. In the early stages, wasn't sure that I was actually going to be that involved in the building of Trulio, because I did really want to be able to be home with my kids. And I think for myself to not have really recognized that toll that two small kids are going to take when you're building a startup. And I was kind of naive. I think I felt like I could do both 100%, and then came to realize that that maybe wasn't going to be possible. And I think we both had to adapt to that. So that's one piece of advice that I really check in on co-founders with, is to say, hey, like, what life stage are you guys in? You know, is one of you fresh out of university and the other one a seasoned entrepreneur who's like semi-retired or, you know, whatnot? These elements really play in. And it was something that we were naive on and ended up playing a big role in it. And so we really ended up having to sit down and go, okay, well, how are we going to do this? How are we going to make this priority happen so that we're both as happy as we can be, that he has for him a really strong co-founder who's able to be there 100%, and I'm able to navigate both. So that was a really key issue that we had to work out in the end.
And did you, I'm now curious, did you have to make any concessions in order to get to a place where you guys were eye to eye?
Yeah, we actually agreed that we would find someone to replace my role as COO to come in as an operations person, and so that I could have more time away from the day to day. And so it took about a year for us to find somebody, but that was a promise that we both made to each other, that we would find this person and we would slowly transition me out of the company in the day to day so that I could have both. But you know, there was still a give and take on both sides for how that was going to happen. So, yeah.
Great. And so, you know, I think Two things jump out at me as I listen to this. One, you know, as you talked about expectations earlier, just time commitment, you know, whether there's kids or no kids, I think is definitely valuable to be on the same page with. But the other thing that you made me think about is the value of starting a business when you're young, you don't have kids. Because this has been a subject that I've discussed before. My children are all older. They're in their 20s. Our oldest recently graduated college 3 years ago, but he started his construction company right away. You know, and part of the premise was just time. You know, he has the ability to be all in. And it can be challenging if you have a family. Obviously, it's done all the time, and there are a lot of successful people. But, I mean, you're right. For the founders out there who are listening to this, you know, it absolutely is something I'd also encourage you to think about.
Yeah, definitely. Unfortunately, for the young 20s or fresh out of university, they want to explore the world and do all the fun things. They're not necessarily thinking, I want to settle in and dig hard and put my financial already unstable condition out there into a entrepreneurship program. But it's really important to recognize that, I guess, no matter what life stage you're at, there's going to be sacrifice in entrepreneurship. Like I said, for me in my 20s, I don't have those fun stories of like going out and partying and having fun and exploring the world. So, you know, we were working in a basement office and building businesses. And so there's always going to be sacrifice, but of course, always recognizing what's that payout, what's the reward, and staying motivated. Sometimes your kids are the motivation to get things up and going, which someone without those constraints may not have. And so there's really pros and cons in all life stages. And just people just need to really recognize what is your motivation and what can you take advantage of in the life stage that you're at, and use that to your advantage to succeed.
100%. You know, we've been very fortunate to have a whole host of very successful founders on the podcast. Not many of them have made it to unicorn status. While we have you, would you please unpack what the journey to product market fit looked like for the company? And you know, any key lessons that are top of mind that you can share with our audience, you know, in their quest to see a $1 billion exit?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, it's interesting because I reflect on our journey and all of our businesses. Some were obviously a lot smaller than Trulia went on to be. But really, it's as entrepreneurs being willing and accepting that the fact that you're going to always have to be limber and you're always going to have to take whatever opportunities are in where you're at. I remember reading an article about a founder who had exited with this very small amount of shares at the end of a major exit. And I remember reading the comments and people being very critical about how they gave so much of their equity away as they raised money. And it, to me, was a very telltale sign of people who had never raised money before. And I think what you come to realize is that every journey in business, it's like raising a kid. It's always going to be a different, every child's a different experience. And that sometimes you can't actually copy what other people did because your snowflake is going to be so different from everybody else's. And so it really is, you know, taking the time and not trying to copy what's being done before, because it probably won't fit. And if you try to do that, it may not work for you. But to really dig into your, not just what your business needs, but also what your outcomes and goals are for yourself as a founder, and to keep those things in mind as well. And then really just do the best you can. You know, it's nice if we could have a bit of a tight algorithm of how to take your business to that level. But in reality, that playbook gets rewritten every day. And every day you're handling a different challenge and fire and opportunity that you can never expect or didn't plan for. So I think that road to unicorn is really just building a business in the way that you see the best to be. And and just have great mentors and be optimistic and stay humble. Those are the best advice that I give on that.
Great. Tanis, really insightful podcast. Thank you. Before we wrap up, last question. If you had an opportunity to go back to your high school self before you started everything, what would you tell yourself to avoid?
Oh, that's a great question. I guess I would tell myself, maybe a little bit like my last answer, avoid trying to fit into an expectation. Again, you know, we really thought that we, you know, if we do this and do that, it'll fit. And really quickly, we learned that that wasn't going to happen. and it makes you panic. And so I think over the long term, just realizing that every day is going to be different, and to trust your gut, trust what you know, and don't try and conform to what you think needs to happen. Just focus on what you need to do. I would keep that as the same advice.
I love it. Yeah, I mean, expectations are very real, and really embracing them, I think, is a great idea on a whole host of fronts, whether it's finding your co-founder, setting off on a new adventure, you know, really being honest with yourself and knowing what you're looking for is extremely valuable. 100% agree.
Awesome.
Tanis, thank you. If there's anyone who's listening to this and they'd like to get a hold of you, how can they find you?
Yeah, I'm all available on LinkedIn. That's my best place to reach out to me. Of course, let them know let me know that you heard me on the podcast here. And I definitely would love to reach out. So LinkedIn is at Tanis George. And that's the best way.
Great. Tanis George, author of the Co-Founders Handbook and founder of the Co-Founders Hub. Tanis, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And again, I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. Thank you for tuning in for another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. Take care. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.